Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Susan Franzen.
Hello, and hello to you, the listener. 4th of July is just around the corner, so Allison Walter will be coming in later today to give us information on what to do and see in Ames over the 4th. Also, remember the great celebrations happening in the area towns as well.
For starters, we'd like to speak with author Craig Bishop, expert on Billy Sunday, a historical figure in our area and famous evangelist and athlete. Mr. Bishop is an author, and he'll be in Ames in Nevada this week to speak in person. Mr. Bishop, are you with us?
I am. Hello. How are you doing this morning?
Hi. Welcome to Local Talk and welcome to KHOI. We're looking forward to having you come to Ames. Where are you now?
I live in Hutchinson, Minnesota, which is about 60 miles west of Minneapolis.
Okay, and you're going to be coming down to Ames on Wednesday?
Yeah, I'll be coming down to Ames on Wednesday. There's a lecture series that the Historical Society, they have four people who come in and speak, and I'm the last one to speak. So that'll be Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at the Ames Public Library.
And the lecture is on Billy Sunday.
The lecture's on Billy Sunday, a native of Ames.
Tell us about Billy Sunday.
Well, Billy Sunday was born in Ames in 1862. He was born in a poor family south of Ames, and his father died in the Civil War, and so he grew up without a father. And his mother, Mary Jane Corey, was penniless and didn't have any way to support her family, and so she sent Billy and his brother Ed off to an orphan home in Glenwood. So basically, Billy Sunday grew up without a father in an orphan's home away from home, and so he was raised basically in orphanages in Glenwood, and then he moved to Davenport when the Glenwood orphanage closed. And from there, he became a professional baseball player, and then he became a famous evangelist known all over the country. So he had a very interesting life.
Absolutely. Very colorful life, and he's probably one of our most colorful historical figures here in Ames. This is quite a life to describe. Tell us a little bit about who you are. How did you end up being interested in Mr. Sunday?
I graduated with a history degree in Kansas State University and then got a master's degree at University of Kansas, and then I went off to Bible school. When I came back, I started reading about historical figures in American history, and one of the person I started reading about was Billy Sunday. And I never heard of him before, and so I started reading about him in a Beckett textbook. And I was really curious about him. He was speaking in a huge building. It looked like he was speaking to maybe 15 or 20,000 people in New York City. So I just went to the Wilson Library at the University of Minnesota, and I just went in the newspaper index, and I just looked up Billy Sunday 1917 and just started reading about him and these meetings he was having. And it was really just amazing. But so I finally finished it, and the Historical Society was gracious enough to allow me to come and speak coming up this next Wednesday.
How long did you actually work on researching Mr. Sunday and writing this book?
I started on this project actually in 1998, so I've been working on this for 18 years now. So it takes a while to get this done. It started out actually as a film project, and then it kind of morphed into a book. And I work a work a regular job, so I can't do this all day long. So
what's your regular job?
I work in a grocery store.
Was it difficult to research Billy Sunday's life?
Well, it takes time. There's a lot of pictures in this book. There's over 190 pictures in this book. So I wanted to illustrate kind of Mr. Sunday and kind of who he was and what he did. And I thought it would be more interesting to see the pictures rather than just seeing the words in the book. So anytime you get into pictures, you get into a lot. You have to, get permissions and, a lot of different things you have to do to get the right copyrights, things like that. So, for example, one of the things I did when I would hear these stories about Billy Sunday, for example, when he was in Springfield, Illinois, and I heard that he had been attacked by a guy by a horse whip. And so I went back, I found the Springfield, Illinois newspapers for 1909, the microfilm, and then I just scrolled back, and I found all the articles that talked about what had happened when this guy pulled out a horse whip under his coat and attacked Billy Sunday on the platform. And all the different pictures and different things that were involved with that.
Why did the guy horsewhip him?
He was a fanatic, and I don't know. They ended up sending him to an insane asylum when it was all over. So it's just one of those things. He was just kind of a nutty guy, and he pulled a horsewhip out under his coat and started whipping Billy Sunday around the legs. And really jumped on him on the platform, and they had to break up a big fight in the tabernacle. He had a very colorful life.
So you sent us some photographs, and it's remarkable. One of the pictures you sent at the beginning is a picture of what looks kind of like a very old log cabin.
Yeah, that's where he was born. That's his log cabin. That's his mother, Mary Jane Corey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his half-stepbrother. And that's not Billy in the picture. But it just kind of shows the poverty he had growing up.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, you can see how dilapidated the cabin looks.
In writing this book, did you come to any sort of understanding about how somebody who starts out with so little ends up having so much to offer and being so successful? Did you come to an understanding of what it was about him that made that possible?
I think part of it is his upbringing. When you grew up in orphanages, you learn how to defend yourself and you learn to live and work and survive. So I think it built a lot of things in his character, work habits, ethics, things like that. He learned that in these orphanages and different things. And then he had a skill as a baseball player, which was just a God-given skill. He was extremely fast. For example, Billy Sunday was in the Iowa State Fair. He decided to run a race. He was only 12 or 13 years old, and he decided to run against all the adult men. And he outran every adult man in the whole race. And when he became a baseball player, he was so fast that he was recruited by Camp Anson to come to Chicago. Camp challenged him to run against one of the fastest guys in the major league on the Chicago White Stockings, and Billy beat him by about 10 feet. And he was just a country kid.
So he was just a natural athlete.
He was just a natural athlete. He really was a natural athlete, extremely fast.
I understand that he used his athleticism as well when he preached.
Yeah, he was very agile. He walked all over the platform, back and forth. Sometimes he would slide on his stomach if he wanted to make in one of his sermons.
I also have heard that he was known to jump up on things, too.
Yeah, he would jump up on the platform sometimes, you know, if he wanted to make a point. I mean, I've got pictures of him, videos, some rare, rare stuff. That he was definitely a very entertaining person. That's one of the reasons why people liked him.
And he did end up coming back to Ames as an evangelist and hold large meetings here in Ames, right, in Chautauquas?
He was very loyal to Ames. He did some meetings in Chautauquas. I don't think he ever had any of his big revival meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He did have Chautauquas, so he was very loyal to Ames, and he had the cemetery there, the Corey family cemetery. He often sent flowers on his put up for his mother's grave there. He had a lot of strong feelings about his growing up years in Ames, but I would have to say one of the things that's interesting about him, he's became so popular that they didn't have stadiums back in those days, so the Christians in the town would get together and build these wooden tabernacles. I think you see one of those in one of those pictures that I sent you.
So it looks kind of like a very rough version of a large convention hall or something like that.
Yeah, the people would build those tabernacles for him to come into town, and then when he left, they would sell the wood to pay for the expenses of the meeting. That particular tabernacle was built in Marshalltown, which is where he kind of became famous playing baseball. That's where he was recognized by Cap Anson.
Was Billy Sunday a national figure, or was he more of a Midwestern phenomenon?
He was a national figure. I think in one year, I think 1908 or 1909, he was voted the eighth most popular man in the country, well-known man in the country.
Really?
He was really a national figure, and I don't think anybody could draw more people than Billy Sunday other than maybe the president or William Jennings Bryan or maybe Harry Houdini or somebody like that. But as far as drawing crowds, he probably was one of the more popular speakers in the whole country, I'd say.
Do you think he had an effect on the religious life in America?
Absolutely. He was probably the leading evangelist of that era. He kind of had a carryover between Billy Graham and Billy Sunday, which I could tell you about if you're interested in. But
can you explain that?
Sure. And this kind of goes back to Billy Sunday died in 1935, but he settled with his wife and family in Winona Lake, Indiana, which is near Chicago. And so he moved there in 1911, and Billy died in 1935. But his wife, Ma Sunday, she lived to 1957. They called her Ma Sunday. Well, anyway, they used to have these Bible conferences in Winona Lake, Indiana, up until about the 1950s, and they would invite groups to come in and speak. And one of the groups they would come in to speak at the Billy Sunday Tabernacle was Youth for Christ. And it just so happened that one of the leaders, two of the leaders, that were Cliff Burrows and Billy Graham, were Youth for Christ. And so Billy Graham and Cliff Burrows would come to Winona Lake, Indiana. And while they were there, they would meet with Ma Sunday. And they would talk to her about what the Billy Sunday meetings were like. And I know this because Cliff Burrows called me on the phone about 10 years ago, and he described to me the meetings that he had with Mrs. Sunday in her home there in Winona Lake, Indiana.
So Billy Graham had a big influence on how how evangelists in general conducted their meetings, and especially on the radio, on TV. Would you say that through Billy Graham, Billy Sunday really, in a sense, was one of the forefathers of the evangelistic styles?
Yeah, I'd say that, Billy Graham learned a lot from the Billy Sunday model.
Hmm.
I would say, because Billy Sunday's song leader was Homer Rodehever, who was probably one of the leading song leaders up to his death in about 1955. But Cliff Burrows was good friends with Homer Rodehever, and so Homer Rodehever taught Cliff Burrows a lot about leading choirs and things like that. There is quite a connection there.
Huh.
In fact, when Homer Rodehever died, Cliff Burrows led the funeral service of the songs and everything at Homer Rodehever's funeral service. Cliff Burrows was there at his home there in Winona, Indiana. Billy Graham was there. Grady Wilson was there. You know, all the Billy Graham people were there in Winona, Indiana.
So this is, we're really talking about some of the roots of American evangelist styles, really.
Yep,
here with,
yep.
Uh-huh.
Billy Graham and Billy Sunday were tied together indirectly.
We're speaking with Craig Bishop, and Craig, you're going to be coming to Ames and Nevada this Wednesday and Thursday to speak more about Billy Sunday and all of this history.
Yep.
And in your lecture, will you tell the story of how all this played out, how this all happened?
Yep, I got a PowerPoint presentation, and I've got slides I can show. I've also got Mrs. Sunday. She played such a big part in Billy's life. Well, one thing, she was his campaign manager for most all of his campaign. I mean, these huge tabernacle meetings where he had thousands and thousands of people coming to these tabernacle meetings. I mean, she organized a lot of these things. Before Mrs. Sunday died, they did these tape recordings of her, and she tells the story of a lot of these campaigns and different things that happened. I've got those digitalized, and I've got those in the PowerPoint presentation, so we'll be able to listen to Mrs. Sunday kind of tell her story about some of the different things that happened during these meetings.
Wow, that's great that you can bring her to life. That's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it should be. It's very interesting. I talked one time about how Billy Sunday met President Wilson in the White House. He was friends with all the presidents. He was friends with President Harding and President Coolidge, and he wasn't very close friends with Franklin Roosevelt. But they had some differences of opinions about things. But he was friends with most of the other presidents.
Going from a log cabin to the White House to living large and very impressive, very impressive.
When Billy became a Christian, and God really impressed upon him, and he had an amazing ability to speak and attract crowds, and so that really, he had a gift.
Okay, and we're speaking with Craig Bishop. He's the author of a book about Billy Sunday called
Billy Sunday, the Baseball Evangelist. Sunday, the Baseball Evangelist, the Story of a Remarkable Life. That's the title of the book. It'll be available if you want to come Wednesday or Thursday.
Mr. Bishop will be giving a presentation at the Ames Public Library on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m., and in Nevada at the Senior Center at 12:45 on Thursday. And both lectures are open to the public, right?
Yep, both lectures are open to the public.
Well, we look forward to hearing about this, and thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us to speak about it in advance.
Oh, and thank you. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Absolutely. Have a good day. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Susan Franson, your co-host with Ursula Rudenberg today. Last Thursday, I stopped by the 2016 Iowa Retail Summit. I've been visiting the towns in our surrounding area since KHOI went on the air in 2012, and I have marveled at the enthusiasm and the love of their towns that the people showed when I talked with them. But I always had a lingering question about how people there made their living. The first person I talked with was Lisa Bates, who organized this conference as part of the Iowa Retail Summit. This is what she had to say about the purpose of the conference.
This is a starting point for us at the Iowa Retail Initiative to really start to closely connect with those out across the state with the resources that we currently have and hopefully develop for the needs across the state. I think if you look at our agenda, there's quite a diverse range of topics and resources available. And I think you need to look at it as a big picture, that it isn't just one component that will make something successful. It's starting to look at all parts, and I think that's what we're trying to do at the Retail Initiative, is try to take a look at all the different working parts that have to kind of come together to create a very successful, vibrant community.
The conferees from the 12 participating towns heard presentations on social media, cultural patterns, and Midwest retail options, and had plenty of opportunities to interact with each other during breakout sessions. But the high point for me was the community showcase at the end, in which various towns had displays describing what they were doing. I selected three that I thought brought something new to the subject that we haven't discovered on our road trips on KHOI. But I did see one person I recognized, Kurt Phillips, head of the Boone County Chamber of Commerce. I won't repeat the glowing things he had to say about Boone County, but he had some general insights that I thought were worth sharing. Actually, it's the everyday thing that I think matters, and have you been talking about the things that really hold people together besides the festivals? That's sort of evidence that people care enough to do it. But what is it that holds people together that you can see from where you are?
Well, creating a sense of community involves a lot of different entities. I think it can start with cities, city government, county government, a good quality chamber of commerce like I think we have is part of it, service organizations, churches, nonprofit organizations, historical, cultural, all those things come together and bring communities together. And if you have strong leadership, boards or executive directors, presidents, whoever they may be, that's how you get more things done, when you have great teams and when those different things I just mentioned come together. And then, again, countywide, when cities work with counties and cities work with other cities. We're doing a bike trails initiative, or I shouldn't even say bike trails. It's a trails initiative because it'll go beyond bikes. And it's going to be a cooperative effort among five or six different jurisdictions throughout the county. That's how things get done, and that's how you create a sense of community. I think sometimes the word community, people only associate with the municipal boundaries. Oh, well, that's where that city starts and that's where it ends. I'm not in the city, or I'm now in the country. Community is a word that has a different meaning too. It means how do we work together? And there's lots of little communities within a greater physical community. And that's how we're getting things done in Boone County. It's people putting their passions into action. Not just saying, I really like that or I really believe in that, but they're doing something about it. Once again, another sense of community. And even if we don't all agree, it's not about everybody agreeing on what's the best course of action, but it's having passionate people trying to make it better for all of us, following their convictions and working together. And again, I think we've seen a lot of that in Boone County, and while again, we're not always all going to agree, this Bill of Rights is a good example of the supervisors hearing it out, lots of discussions, whether it goes beyond the discussion or not, remains to be seen, but at least the word is vetted, the concept, the discussion, the topic has been vetted and thought about, and it wouldn't have probably been otherwise. If these people behind that Bill of Rights hadn't come forward with it, we may not have had some of the discussions we've had, so it can't hurt.
One of the things that Lisa Bates said was that there is no formula for what makes a successful community. As I thought about the points of pride in Boone County, I wondered what variations we might find if we went outside the counties of our listening area. I think I'll start with a particularly striking display from Hampton, county seat of Franklin County, as described by Newton Grutzinger, executive director of the Greater Franklin County Chamber. It's the effect of the Latino community there that sets it apart from many other towns.
Well, there's always a lot of things that are happening in Hampton. Of course, the summer is one of the more active. Currently, every Tuesday in June, we have an artist that comes in. We call it Tuesday on the Town. And every Tuesday, we have a Nashville artist that comes into town. And we take them around town, show them to our sponsors. And then at night, we have a meal that's a benefit for a little for different entities in town. This week is for the food pantry. And then the Nashville artist goes on at 6:30, plays until 7:30. And then at 8 o'clock, we have our municipal band that's been around for 95 years. They play all in our band shell park. And it's a wonderful setting, and we've had beautiful nights there, so we look forward to that every night in June. And, of course, we have our summer fest the last weekend in August. It's a car show on Saturday with the white sidewalls and a lot of entertainment for families and just good family fun.
Oh, well, how big is Hampton?
Hampton's right around 4,500 people. One of the novelties there is our specialty shops. We have several specialty shops that are involved there. And you come down, and each one, they're in a group, so they try never to have the same thing in each specialty shop. And so they have a multitude of different things. One of the places there to stop, if you like a coffee or a brew, it's called Rustic Brew. It's local owners, and they do their coffee there, and they also brew their own beers. Usually have about 6 to 8 different types.
Well, I noticed that you stress on here that it's a diversified community. So you have a large ethnic population?
Yeah, we have somewhere close to 30% Latino population in our town. La Luz Hispana, which we work very closely with. As a matter of fact, Sister Carmen is on our board with the chamber. Just had what they called Grand Festival. That was the first weekend in June. And unfortunately, they can't see the pictures that are up here, but you can see it was very colorful. We had a great time when they were in town, and that was fun. There's a number, and it's wonderful because a lot of our storefronts that would possibly be closed are open because they're very entrepreneurish. And we have a number of Latino restaurants and stores that are open downtown, and we really appreciate that.
Now, I noticed that you... on your poster, you have the Windsor Cinema. So have you had...
The Windsor Theater?
Yes.
The Windsor Theater was back a few years ago where from a leadership group, a bunch of students decided, I believe it was in the 80s, decided that we need our theater reopened. And they created a foundation, and they were able to raise the money. And it opened up in the 90s. It's been going strong ever since. We have movies there every night except for Monday nights. And on Monday nights, first Monday of each month, we have what's called the Hoedown. And so we have different, it's just some classic country music. So it's a lot of fun. It's great to have that back into a town of 4,500.
Now, have you been able to make the switch to digital?
Yes, everything is digital at this time, which is wonderful. It's really moving right along. We have a great person who's in charge of that and manages it, Jim Davies. He's very good in town, but he does that and a lot of other things. Something else you might notice up here, we just had an alley art project done. 1,300 square foot of a building was painted by a local artist. His name is Ricardo Ramirez. Took him just over 9 days to do it. And again, it also depicts our diversity in the town as well as the county itself.
And I see you are the county seat from your county courthouse on your poster.
Yes, we're very proud of that as well. We are the county seat. That also is wonderful because it with the courthouse there, it brings a lot of people into town.
And you also have, I can see, an outdoor swimming pool.
The Aquatic Center is fairly new, and it, as you can see by the picture, is very active. We have a lot of children and kids and adults that come in there every day during the summer months, and they enjoy it a lot.
Another display was Main Street Manning. Ron Reichel, president of the Board of Manning Chamber of Commerce, described the steps this town of 1,500 has taken to make a name for itself.
The story behind the posters is we had engaged with the Iowa State College of Design students and brought them in, and they came in and did basically these drawings of our four, what we call our skyline icons, a house barn, Trinity Church, water tower, and a trestle in Manning. And they also, as a separate project, came in and did signage designs for all of our downtown businesses after we had gone through a renovation and all the businesses needed signs. So the students came in and provided designs for us. We also had a student, actually students come in and said they looked at an unused part of town that was right in front of our Milwaukee Trestle and said this would be a great place for a park and great place to put a sign, a large Iowa sign that's like 20 foot high. And so the community is actually in the process of doing that. We've gotten a number of grants and local fundraising. So as a result of a simple suggestion by an Iowa State College of Design student, we'll have a new park in Manning.
Where is Manning and how large is it? And tell us me a little about the town.
Manning is a town of 1,500 people, so it's a small rural community. It's in the middle of west central Iowa in Carroll County. It's got a history of being very progressive. Right now, for a town of 1,500 people, we have a two-year-old new hospital. We're building a hotel right now, and we just had a 36-unit assisted living center opening up. So, and we've had, I think, seven or eight partnerships with Iowa State College of Design and are just finishing up a partnership with Drake University also. So we're definitely utilizing college students' talent and have had great success with it.
Well, what's your economic base?
Oh, it's agricultural. The biggest employer in town would be our hospital. We've got a hospital clinic and family recovery center. We've got a local farmer started developing some products, Puck Custom Enterprises, and so that's developed into a manufacturing facility of 60 people. So as an entrepreneur, he's done great. But overall, the economy is governed by agriculture.
Do you have a school?
Yes, we do have a school. Consolidated School System, Irwin, Kirkman, Manila, Manning. And so the majority of the grades are in Manning, but about three grades are in Irwin.
So you have a high school?
Yes, we do have a high school that's located in Manning. And they have a successful STEM program, and we're trying to establish a tight partnership between the school and our businesses in providing information to our high school students on what careers are available either right after high school or after college. Well, one thing I'd like to share with you is one thing that's unique about Manning is we have a 1660s era German house barn in Manning that was brought over from Germany, and it's part of a heritage park sitting next to a farm place. It's on a historic register, and they've been very successful in bringing destination weddings to rural Iowa. Yeah, people from Chicago want to get out into rural areas, literally cornfields, to have their weddings. So we've been successful in that. The one poster you pointed to was done by Drake University. We have an issue of getting people from, say, the German House Barn or the rec center where they have swim meets to downtown. So they designed a poster that advertises our food, recreation, and shopping that we have available downtown.
Well, thank you.
And finally, we heard from Bob Wilson, Executive Director of the Perry Chamber, about how the Raccoon River Valley Trail has revitalized communities along the old Milwaukee Railroad.
You're representing Perry, is that right?
You're absolutely correct. Perry, Iowa, we love it. Big into cycling. We're right off the Raccoon River Valley Trail, which is a 72-mile loop with an 80. It goes up to Jefferson, so it's 89-mile extension there. We're the host of the Bike Trail Tourism Conference every year. We did that. This year was our third year at the Hotel Pattee. So we're big into cycling. It's a huge economic impact in our town, and we're looking forward to being connected to what's called the High Trestle Trail shortly. We're actively fundraising for that.
On your map, there were a lot of small communities that trail went through. Could you show me your map?
Absolutely. The Raccoon River Valley Trail goes through 14 communities in total, some of them rather small, some of them vary in size up to Perry's the largest at 8,000 people. Goes through Waukee, obviously a pretty big part there, and then over to Panora, up to Jefferson and around.
Well, I see you've got a couple towns that are on the river.
Yeah, thus the Raccoon River Valley Trail. So the river kind of meanders through the entire program there. It also touches the Lake Panorama area over in Panora as well. But it's kind of a neat opportunity. The wildlife is great. I ride it every day. You cross the river on a nice little river bridge just outside of Perry. It's a beautiful place. It is flat since it's all old railroad bed, too. This is no more than 2% grade the whole way across. So everybody can ride, walk, skate, or do whatever they want on it.
It occurred to me when I first heard about these trails, and I remember the Rails to Trails movement, that towns that had their economies destroyed when the railroads left were repurposing those.
Absolutely. All this Raccoon River Valley Trail was old railroad bed. So the Milwaukee Railroad used to service Perry at that time. That's all now into a recreational trail. So Chuck Offenberger, the famous columnist, the Iowa boy, he's got a great saying that he says in a lot of programs is, those railroad beds right now, those railroad trails, are bringing more people in as bike trails than they ever did when they had train cars on them. So it's an interesting way to think. I mean, the numbers are there. We're counting about 300,000 plus people riding annually on the Raccoon River Valley Trail. So those are some incredible numbers.
HOI Community Radio, thanks for listening in. Well, it's the 4th of July coming up next weekend.
Yes.
And just in time, Allison Walter from the Convention and Visitors Bureau is here to tell us what's going to happen in the area.
Yes, you know, it's going to be a full weekend of celebration. The fireworks are actually on Sunday the 3rd. So we want to be sure that everyone knows that.
Now tell everybody again why that is. What is this Ames tradition of fireworks on the 3rd?
Well, the cost is a huge reason for it. Ames has a requirement that the fireworks be set off electronically versus by someone actually holding a match to the fireworks. So that somewhat limits the companies that are available to do it.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it's much more expensive to do it on the 4th uh-huh. than it is the day before or the day after. So we have really gone to, depending on when the holiday is, either the 3rd or the 5th.
Uh-huh.
And this year, with the 4th being on Monday, the fireworks are on Sunday evening, the 3rd.
It's a nice time. It's a nice night for fireworks.
It is. Sunday yes. night. Mm-hmm. It's a nice way to do it. And there is a rain date of the 5th, just in case, but hopefully that won't happen. Won't have to happen. So, but the weekend kicks off on Friday.
And what is the best place to see the fireworks?
Well, you know, there are, a lot of people that go out to the intramural fields and the parking lots near Iowa State Center and near the Maple Willow Larch residence halls. That's a great way to watch. Also, the Ryman Gardens area, Ryman Gardens will be open. They'll be open all day, and they have their regular admission throughout the day, but after 6 o'clock, you actually can get in free.
And you can sit in the garden and watch the fireworks.
Right. And mm-hmm. it's beautiful. It's yeah. a beautiful surroundings, a wonderful atmosphere to enjoy the fireworks. Mm-hmm. And also they will be having the High Society Band playing. And they start, I think, around 7. Let me look at this here real quick. They're playing throughout the evening, and so that's a great way to enjoy the gardens. You get in for free, and they do allow you to bring in food and coolers. They ask that you don't bring sparklers or fireworks or anything like that mm-hmm. to do inside the the fence of Ryman Gardens. But after 6 o'clock, you can come in and enjoy the gardens and the High Society band playing, and then watch the fireworks. And they'll be open until the end of the fireworks, and it's just a great family atmosphere, great place to be for the fireworks.
Okay, so let's back up again to Friday.
Yes. Well,
sorry,
actually,
I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. Actually, Thursday we'll have the municipal band concert Thursday evening as usual. So bring your snacks and your lawn chairs down to Bandshell Park and enjoy the performance. And then
Mr. Paul Lundy, one of our faithful volunteers, he's in the municipal band.
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful tradition. It's a great place to spend the evening and enjoy some music. Then on Ames on the Half Shell will be Friday evening at the Bandshell Park. So this week's performer is King of the Tramps, and it's a new band for Ames on the Half Shell this year. So
do you know what kind of music it is?
I don't. I'm not familiar with them at all. So.
With a name like that, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it should be interesting. and they have been inviting food trucks to come each week to add food options. So this week they will have Carlos Quesadilla and Finley's Curbside Bistro, along with their beer garden there. And that's from 5 to 8. So you can be at the Bandshell on Thursday evening for the municipal band concert, Friday evening for Ames on the Half Shell. And this is their last week of Ames on the Half Shell. The municipal band concerts go on through the month of July, but it is the last Ames on the Half Shell. Of course, on Saturday, you can come down for the Main Street Farmers Market and also head out to North Grand for their farmers market. And the Main Street Farmers Market will have the Bill Martin Trio and the Lawn Chairs performing. Now, I have not seen or heard the Lawn Chairs, so that's another new one for me this year. You just never know what you'll see downtown, right? And then on the 3rd, we kick off with 5 on the 4th. I have to always remember that because it used to be 4 on the 4th at one point, and then they changed it. 5 on the 4th is Friendship Arcs fundraising run on the 4th of July. Oh, sorry, that's Monday, the 4th of July. I'm off on my dates. So Sunday is the fireworks, and then
right,
things that come up on Monday. For the 4th of July, you can start off your holiday, and it's a 5K run around the Ada Hayden Park.
And it's a fundraiser for what?
For Friendship Arc Homes. And they have
which is homes for people with disabilities.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's intellectual disabilities, mm-hmm, I think, mostly. Yeah. And they do this. I think this is their, I think I heard, 12th year of mm-hmm this fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So lots of fun.
Is that something that anybody can participate
in? Anyone can participate.
How do you get involved with
that? They have a registration page. It's called getmeregistered.com is the website. And
okay,
you can get on and pre-register, mm-hmm, and you'll get your T-shirt and all of that. You know, as you typically do with a race. And then after you have run, you can come down to City Hall and have pancakes.
That's right. The City Council makes pancakes.
Right. It's the mayor's annual pancake breakfast.
On the morning of the 4th of July.
Correct. Yep. And they always do it right before the 4th of July parade. So they'll start serving pancakes around 8:30. And continue to 10 until about 10:30, which gives you plenty of time to enjoy the pancakes and then make your way over to Main Street for the parade. And the parade begins at 11 o'clock sharp. So,
and look for the KHOI banner.
Oh, you'll be there. Wonderful.
Yeah.
The last year there was almost 100 entries in the parade.
Wow.
And so it's about an hour long, but lots of fun, great community organizations that are always in the parade. And then, and also while you're after you've had your pancakes and you're waiting for the parade to start, from 9 to 11 at the intersection of Main Street and Burnett, you can watch the Bill Riley Talent Competition.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is a preliminary competition, and that where the winner will actually go on and compete at the Iowa State Fair.
And who's competing?
Anyone can compete. And
so you can just go there?
You can register ahead of time, or uh-huh. you can, I think, actually register the day of uh-huh. and be a part of the competition. And it's a great show to see everyone competing and watch all the dancing and baton twirling and everything else, singing that goes on. So,
and the parade goes along what route?
The parade route is... we'll start at Clark and Main Street, and it'll proceed east on Main Street to Douglas, turn left on Douglas north, and then back west on 5th Street back to the intersection of Clark and 5th. So it's a nice parade route, lots of spots to watch and sit on the curb.
They and receive the candy.
Right. They do ask that you, be careful and keep your children out of the street so that they are safe. And so parents, just keep an eye on your kids because there's lots going on. And there's lots of, there's large parade entries that are going down the street. So you'll just want to be careful of that, especially at the corners. So, and if you're interested in signing up for that Bill Riley Talent Search, you can email Sarah Buss, who works for the Ames Chamber, and that's a personal passion of hers that she's been organizing that for the community for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So she can help you get signed up.
So presumably if you go to the Ames Chamber website...
Yes, her email is Sarah at Ames Chamber, so it's pretty...
Sarah at Ames Chamber.
Yeah, pretty easy to remember.
S-A-R-A-H?
H, yes.
At Ames Chamber.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, or give the chamber a call and they uh-huh. can get you connected. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So lots going on all day long. And, stores will be open on Main Street, so you can take advantage of that. And just really enjoy the day in the community.
Susan, the Slater folks stopped by
yes.
and brought us their brochure. Can
yes.
Can you give a highlight or two from Slater, since I know 4th of July is a big thing down there, too?
Yes, it is. And they also have their fireworks on Sunday night.
Okay.
And although their rain date is Monday, so I guess they must have a different system for lighting up.
Right.
Their big parade is on Monday, of course, but they also have a kiddie parade on Sunday. And the evening entertainment on Sunday is a community band and chorus. And we've been featuring a little bit about the community band because Scott Keyes, their director, the band director at Ballard High School, and who started the community band,
mm-hmm.
Is retiring this year.
Oh.
And he is also the grand marshal of their parade, which starts at 10 a.m.
Wonderful. When is the kiddie parade in
the
Slater?
Kiddie parade is at 6 p.m.
Uh-huh.
on Sunday. And it starts at Main and goes down to Nelson Park, which is where the big stage is. And the other entertainment in the evening, actually during the fireworks. The fireworks are at 10 p.m., but from 8:30 to 12:30, we have Burnin' Sensations,
uh-huh.
which is got a KHOI connection.
Sure,
because
Ron yes.
Carson, who puts our shows up on our website, is a bass player in the
yes.
Burnin' Sensations.
Who is the Grand Marshal for the Ames Parade?
Oh, I knew you. As she mentioned that, I thought, oh, darn, it was announced last week. And he is a veteran, a local veteran, and very active here with the local American Legion, and I cannot remember his name, I'm sorry to say.
Okay. Anyway, Susan, go on.
Oh, well, there are a lot of things for kids in Slater. There is horseshoe tournament, and Chalk the Street and Human Checkers on Saturday. And that's unique. I've been looking at other festivals. I don't think anybody else has had a Chalk the Street. Airbrush Tattoos is another one that I hadn't seen anywhere else. And, of course, they have a dunk tank, which is always fun for the local celebrities. And proceeds go to the Ballard Soccer Club.
And the local veteran, Howard Kyle.
Thank you.
He's going to be the Grand Marshal in
Ames. For Ames, yes.
Okay. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
No, that's fine. And
lots of stuff. So Slater is very child-friendly.
Family.
Yes, well, this is a time for high school reunions and family reunions. In fact, I even heard about one family that kept the family home just for 4th of July reunions.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's
okay,
super.
Well, thank you, Susan.
I've got a little Allison? Information about Nevada and Boone.
Oh, okay, great.
Nevada has a pancake breakfast at the fire station starting at 6:30 on the 4th of July.
Wow, that's so start early in Nevada.
Yes, and they have a parade at 10. And then fireworks at 9 o'clock on the evening of the 4th of July.
Okay. So Nevada, the pancakes start at 6:30 on the 4th?
Yes.
So you can start in Nevada and then
there you go, and
go
then make
Ames.
Your way. Yes. Yeah.
And Ames is at 10?
8:30. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And then in Boone, they're doing things out at the Boone Speedway. And starting at 3 o'clock on the 4th through 10 o'clock, they're calling it Eve of Destruction races, of course, because it's, and they'll have Boone's Got Talent, and then they'll have the fireworks. So all of their events are on the 4th.
On the 4th.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So
okay, cool.
lots to do in the area.
Right.
Yeah.
And I do
touring Central Iowa.
Slater's Got Talent, too.
Oh, do they? Okay, good.
Ames has the Bill Riley Talent Show, but everybody's got talent.
Yeah.
Okay, Allison, anything else that we should know about the month of July we're done with the 4th?
Sure. There's a few things that you might want to keep in mind. Of course, the Iowa Games. And there will be Iowa Games sports going on every weekend after the holiday, starting on July 9th. Each weekend we will have competitions going on throughout the community, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And for someone who might not know what the Iowa Games are?
Sure. An amateur Olympic-style competitions. And they are open to all Iowans, and there's lots of team sports as well as individual sports. They started in 1987 with 16 sports and about 7,000 athletes, and this year will be their 30th anniversary, and they have over 60 sports available, and they're expecting over 13,000 athletes.
Wow.
So it's a huge month-long event, and Ames is very proud to have hosted them for 30 years. And Friday the 15th is their big athlete jamboree. So all of the athletes and their teams and their families are invited to the Jack Trice-S parking lots, and there'll be inflatable games, face painting, a community meal, and then they'll do the opening ceremonies after that, starting, I think, about 7 o'clock, starting with the jamboree around 5 and then moving on to the opening ceremonies, and then there'll be fireworks again on that evening, Friday the 15th, as part of the opening ceremonies for the Iowa Games. And then they'll continue on the next weekend as well. And we will also have the week of July 24th through the 31st. We will have Beep Baseball. And Ames is the host for the World Series for Beep Baseball. Beep Baseball is baseball for the visually impaired. And it's an adaptive version of baseball where the ball beeps and the buzzes bait. The basses buzz. I knew I couldn't say that quite right.
Wow.
So if you're visually impaired at any level, on into completely blind, you can participate. Iowa actually has a team, and it's through Adaptive Sports Iowa, which is part of the Iowa Sports Foundation, which does the Iowa Games. And they have a team of players that practice all year long and play competitions, and they'll be participating in the World Series this year. I believe we have... It's either 22 or 24 teams from around the United States, Mexico, Canada. There is a team from Taiwan, but they are not coming. They're not going to be here this year. But it will be out in the Southeast Athletic Complex across the road, across University Boulevard from Jack Trice Stadium.
And you can watch it?
You can watch. Mm-hmm. You can volunteer. We're looking for lots of volunteers to put on the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun.
And to volunteer, you contact
the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Mm-hmm. And if you go to our visitames.com website, right on the homepage, you can see a link to volunteer for both Iowa Games and the Beat Baseball tournament. Mm-hmm. Takes lots of volunteers to put on these events, and that's a great thing about Ames is people love to volunteer and their time to mm-hmm. help support these events.
Okay. Anything else before we wrap up?
Oh, gosh. You know, just don't forget that Main Street will be hosting their Firefly Country Night on Sunday, mm-hmm. July 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
thank you
lots
so much.
Going on.
Thank you. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Lots of events happening this month. Thank you for joining us today. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Susan Franson.
Today we spoke with Craig Bishop, expert on historic evangelist Billy Sunday, who will be giving a presentation at the Ames Public Library on Wednesday at 7 p.m. and in Nevada at the Senior Center at 12:45 p.m. on Thursday. Both lectures are open to the public. We also heard from various business leaders in Central Iowa who came to Ames last week for the 2016 Iowa Retail Summit.
And as always, at the end of the month, we are graced with Allison Walter's presence from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, and who gave us lots of information about 4th of July and other things happening. Big sports month in Ames in July. Thank you, Allison, for coming by.
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity.
Local Talk is on KHOI Radio at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen to today's entire Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about the people you heard today on the show, along with contact information and links to the people, places, and things we talked about.
Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Thank you, Jonah. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. We also heard Born on the 4th of July by the boss, Bruce Springsteen. Local Talk is a radio production, training workshop, as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer reporters. We'll train you, and you will learn lots about our community and love it as much as we do. If you'd like to join the team, call us at 292-2878 or contact us through khoifm.org. That's 292-2878.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.